Hello and welcome to Nightcap with Jim. I'm the titular Jim, and tonight we will be discussing the Netflix original film Triple Frontier, as well as some other Netflix originals, including the Marvel shows that Netflix was running, and some other news from the MCU. For more content you may enjoy, please check out our Morning Mangame podcast and our other social media content at Mangame Players, all across the different social media. All right, let's get into it. All right, we begin with news of the MCU. James Gunn has officially been rehired as the writer-director of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is awesome! This news broke about a week and a half ago, and I'm just super, super excited about it. Marvel finally came to their senses, you know, and you got to imagine that a big part of that has to be, you know, the cast and the crew and the people and the other cast and crew members of the MCU kind of rallying around and just saying, you know, like, hey, just, you know, bring him back, because he's awesome. You know, especially Dave Bautista saying, you know, very publicly that if they just scrapped the script that James Gunn wrote, he was just done altogether. So, you know, you gotta think that support has gotta feel pretty good. And James Gunn said as much when the news broke. So he will commence the making of Guardians Volume 3 after he finishes up with the DC film The Suicide Squad, which is going to be a full reboot from what DC is saying, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. We'll see what happens, you know. They may change their minds, or, you know, they'll go forward with it and just do a full reboot of it, which, I mean, it's James Gunn, so it's going to be good either way. You know, still excited for it. It's just kind of a bummer because, you know, I like the first Suicide Squad. I really do. You know, obviously, mistakes were made. But still, I think it was fairly solid for what it was. And, you know, and I love the cast of it. And they all did, like, the cast did a great job. You know what I mean? Like, you can say whatever you want about the movie itself. You know, the story, how the plot moves and everything like that. But the cast did a really good job with their characters. You know, Will Smith as Deadshot was great. Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn was great. You know, Jai Courtney as Boomerang, Captain Boomerang, excuse me, great. You know, just good cast all around. Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flagg, you know. For a full reboot, you know, I don't know how that's going to work out, but we'll wait and see. We'll see what happens. Moving on from that, some more good news on the MCU front. I've heard that Hulu or another streaming service may pick up the Netflix Marvel television shows, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, The Punisher, and The Defenders, which is such great news. So much good news, guys. I'm really happy to be giving you all this great news. I would sound a little bit more enthusiastic, but I think I have a little bit of a cold. I got the sniffles. But it's so awesome. I'm so excited, you know. You guys know, you know, how much I love The Punisher, and Daredevil is amazing, and these other shows as well. It's just so great, and The Defenders is one of my favorite team-ups. It was done so magnificently well on Netflix. So to hear that those shows it's possible that they might get picked up again. Just the possibility, the slightest glimmer, ray of sunshine breaking through the clouds of hope, has me really super duper duper excited. So we're definitely going to be following that story as more news breaks on that. And moving on from that to some upcoming Netflix originals that I'm pretty excited about that are coming out soon. Starting with the Netflix original film starring Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson, The Highwaymen. This tells the story of the Texas Rangers who were brought in to hunt down the outlaws Bonnie and Clyde. If you don't know the story, Bonnie and Clyde were a pair of outlaws that were, you know, bank robbers and murderers who had quite a folk following amongst the populace during the Depression. And they've typically been portrayed as heroic characters, especially if you go back and watch the 1967 or 68, 69 Bonnie and Clyde with Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, which is a magnificent film and actually broke ground and was very controversial at the time because I believe it's the very first film ever to ever have a gunshot hit, like a bullet hit, with the gun and the person being shot in the same frame. Now, what I mean by this is they're in a car, and there's I believe a policeman, and he's grabbed onto the car as they're trying to make their getaway, and he's hanging on the outside, and I believe it's Clyde takes his gun, and so the gun is in frame, so we're doing kind of an over-the-shoulder type of a shot. The gun is in frame, and then the policeman is in the same shot, the same frame, and the gun goes off, and then you see the glass break, and, you know, a bullet hit. And nobody had done that before. So it was kind of a big deal at the time, and I think it still is, because whenever you talk about violence in film and you see the progression of it over time, you know, nowadays we have things, you know, like Saw, where you have people, you know, just like cutting skin, you know, just flaying skin off of people, and, you know, decapitations, and, you know, like even silly violence like in 21 Jump Street, where they shoot the principals off, you know, at the end of the movie. And you just look at the progression of how that's come along. This movie, you know, is one of those stepping stones that we have, that we can look at and see this progression, this progressive increase of violence being portrayed more and more realistically, and also just more and more gruesomely in film and television. So The Highwaymen tells the story of the Texas Rangers who were hired to go after Bonnie and Clyde, because the law enforcement agencies that, you know, were working in the areas that Bonnie and Clyde were active in, just couldn't do anything. They couldn't keep up. They couldn't handle the level of violence and activity that these guys were going through. Shut up! So they were like, okay, well, I guess we're going to have to go outside. We're going to have to call some outside agency, because this is, again, the time when, you know, Hoover, who formed the FBI, was trying to form the FBI, a federal police force that could operate across state borders. Because you have to remember, before this time, the federal government didn't have a lot of stuff going on in terms of crime, especially. You know, like, there was no national police force, and they took state boundaries very seriously, as, you know, we still kind of do, but they're a little bit more lax about it because, you know, we have more radio communications and cross agency cooperation between law enforcement. So, you know, neighboring counties, you know, they know how to deal with something like a car chase that goes from one county into another, or from one state into another. And so when it comes to cross border crime in terms of like states and counties and states and things like that. Nowadays, we know how to handle it a little bit better when it comes to a local law enforcement agency. But back then, you know, once they crossed this imaginary arbitrary line, that was it. That was the end of that chase. And they didn't have radios in a lot, you know, in a lot of cars, if they had radios at all. So there was no way for them to warn the next, you know, the agencies in the next state that this was going to happen, that these guys were coming through. So it made tracking and hunting down these types of criminals very, very difficult. So so when you have, you know, these states that are just so fed up with this and not being able to do anything about it, and they're just like, okay, screw it, we're not putting up with this anymore, let's get these Texas Rangers, they're gonna help us out, and we're just gonna give them carte blanche to chase these guys, to run these guys down. And it's pretty interesting. Now, I will say this, the way that the whole thing ends, I haven't seen, the movie's not out yet, so I haven't seen it. I'm talking about the real life occurrences. I don't like the way that the story ends, and I don't want to, I mean, it's history, but, you know, I'm sure there's not a lot of people out there who readily have access to the knowledge in their brain of the story of Bonnie and Clyde and how this whole thing came to an end. Much less, you know, the story itself, you know, the meaty stuff of, you know, them, you know, meeting and going on this epic crime spree. So, I'm not going to say anything, because, you know, if you don't know the history of it, then that's fine, you know, watch the movie, and you'll get a taste, you know, or go watch Bonnie and Clyde, or, you know, Bonnie and Clyde with, Emil Hirsch, he did a little mini series, like two or three episode mini series, about Bonnie and Clyde. So, you know, you can check out whatever you like about it. But I just don't like how the story ends, because it's such kind of an ignominious end to such an epic kind of tale, and, involves a little bit of cowardice, in my personal opinion. Especially, you know, when you look at the people involved, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, who are these larger-than-life outlaws, and then these Texas Rangers, who are larger-than-life lawmen, and you expect this story to come to an epic, you know, conclusion of this crazy gun battle, possibly a running gun battle, you know, through a town, or, you know, through a town and then out into another town, or into the woods, or, you know, just something big and huge like Lone Survivor or something like that. But we don't get that, you know, much. And that's the case with most of these outlaw stories during the Depression, you know. John Dillinger, shot in the back of the face, you know, or back of the head, I should say. You know, shot in the back of the head. Which is like, I feel like that's a pretty punk move, you know? For you to, you know, just walk up behind a dude and just be like, pop! And that's the end, that's it, that's the end of Dillinger. You know what I mean? And, you know, not that I'm advocating for these criminals, for these outlaws, and talking shit about, you know, the law enforcement officers. But, you know, I feel like if I was there that night, you know, outside the theater, waiting for Dillinger to come out, and, it was me, like, I was the guy that shot, like, that instead of the guy that shot Dillinger, it was me there, right? I don't think I would have pulled the trigger like that, because, like, you know, because I, in my mind, I would just be thinking, okay, I'm about to take out John Dillinger right now. How do I want to do this, you know? Like, I would much rather have just, like, tackle, arrest, jail time. What up, bitch? And, you know, then you have a good story. Or, you know, like, if you take him out in a big old gun battle, then it's like, well, phew, I did it. You know, like, I conquered Dillinger the gunfighter. But for you to just walk up and be like, boop, got you in the back of the head, bitch. I feel like you're just a bit of a coward, you know, that's my personal opinion. You know what I mean? So it is what it is. But having said that, these particular Texas Rangers, were pretty badass guys, you know, like no joke. They were tough mothers. They'd taken a lot of punishment before they even got involved with the Bonnie and Clyde investigation and hunt. And, you know, for them to, and because they're aged, you know, like they've been around the block a couple of times, you know, and it's not because they were so drunk they couldn't find the house. It was, you know, it's because like they did their job for a long time, and then finally they get the call, hey, we need you to come get Bonnie and Clyde for us. So I'm really looking forward to it, especially to see the opposite, the flip side of the thing, because whenever Bonnie and Clyde's been portrayed in film or television, it's usually from the perspective of Bonnie and Clyde and the law enforcement. You know, even if we do get to hang out with them, it's only for a little bit. We spend the majority of our time with Bonnie and Clyde, and so by nature of spending more time with them and the way that actors portray them and the way that the writers write them, they become romanticized and we end up sympathizing with them, and we feel, you know, we feel things that we probably shouldn't feel about these murderers and you know, and thieves, you know, just because they, you know, give away a couple of bucks to some farmers and shit doesn't erase the action of killing people, you know what I mean? Whether it's a law enforcement officer or an innocent bystander or just some guy who, you know, a good guy with a gun, basically. And so, you know, it's going to be nice to finally see from the actual good guy's perspective this chase, which that was one of the things that I appreciated about Public Enemies with Christian Bale and Johnny Depp, was that we kind of got equal time with both. We got equal time with Dillinger and with Melvin Purvis, which was really cool, because you get to sympathize with whoever you like, you know, and for me, I sympathize with both of them, you know, like, I like outlaws, you know, Billy the Kid and Jesse James and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, you know, I like these kinds of figures. I find them incredibly fascinating and interesting character subjects and character studies. And also just, you know, like the history of these kinds of things, I find it very fascinating. And, like a lot of these stories, you don't get these outlaw type stories. You don't get a lot of what the, law enforcement side of it was like. And, you know, the perils that, you know, a sheriff or a Texas Ranger or a cop, what they were going through dealing with these very dangerous, very talented and in some cases extremely well-trained criminals. You know, like you look at Dillinger especially, his team operated like a military squad, you know, and that's because, you know, the guy that trained them and taught them this type of criminality was in the military, and so he brought that military training over. And, you know, when they would take over a bank, they took it over like they were a squad of, you know, from some sort of from a military. So it was like a military operation. So these were very dangerous people for law enforcement to deal with. And so it's going to be very nice to see how this is portrayed. And so definitely look forward in an upcoming episode where I will review The Highwaymen. One other, the trailer just dropped today, Saturday, as I'm recording this, on Saturday, the 23rd of March, Trailer Park Boys, the animated series. Now, this is a very interesting thing because I've been wondering for months and months and months how and if they were going to continue doing Trailer Park Boys after the very unfortunate passing of John Dunsworth, who played to perfection the wonderful Mr. Jim Leahy, the trailer park supervisor, or the drunk trailer park supervisor, I should say. Now, this is actually perfect, and it makes perfect sense. If you recall, if you're a Trailer Park Boys fan, if you recall the last season that they did, they, you know, as per usual, as per every the ending of every single season of Trailer Park Boys, they're about to go to jail, and in order to avoid serious jail time, they have, because they have shrooms on them, they, the entire group just starts eating the hallucinogenic mushrooms. And the end of the episode is like a shared group hallucination where they all turn animated. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And it cracks me up every time, but then I immediately get really sad because it cuts to black and then it says, in loving memory of John Dunsworth. So I go from, you know, one of the biggest laughs I've ever had to one of the biggest sads, you know, ever as well. So, so it's really cool that they decided to continue making Trailer Park Boys, and for them to make it animated is such a stroke of genius, and I'm super excited to see where they go with it. The trailer is hilarious. It looks like the antics that these guys are going to get up to are going to become, you know, just about like 100 times more outrageous with this animated thing. But it's funny, there's actually a moment in the trailer where Bubble says, you know, I think we should assume that the laws of reality still apply. So it's like they're just like they're in this hallucination, this group hallucination, where they all look and see things as animated, and the entire world they see as an experience as being animated. But it's actually not; it's still real life. And this kind of mirrors, I think, what's going to happen with Archer, because Archer, if you remember, after Archer Vice, when they formed the Figgis Agency and become private detectives, the first episode of that season opens with Archer dead in a pool, shot in the head. And I didn't finish that particular season because I wanted to wait until more seasons came out. I haven't seen any of the new seasons preceding that or following that one, except for Danger Island. And what I think is going to happen with Archer is that we're going to find that all these adventures that have been happening that are, you know, these, like, one-offs, like, because there was a noir one that took place in, like, the 40s, and then you have Danger Island, and then I believe there's a third one. We're eventually going to come back to the regular world of Archer. It's, you know, ambiguously set in some sort of time that, you know, looks and feels like the 70s, but has the technology and the references of, you know, stuff from the 2000s to 2010s. And I feel like the season will open with Archer in a hospital bed recovering from the gunshot wound that he received in that season all those seasons ago. So it's going to be interesting to see where they take this new Trailer Park Boys animated stuff and if they will ever come back to the regular real world. Because it's possible that that's how they might kill off Jim Leahy, is in the animated form, which will kind of lessen the blow for us a little bit. But I don't know. You know, we'll see what happens. But I'm really excited for it. I love Trailer Park Boys, and for them to continue that animation that they just so briefly did at the end of that last season is a stroke of genius. So I'm really looking forward to that. Alright, I'm going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to discuss, if you will recall, one of my top picks for most anticipated stuff I wanted to see this year, Triple Frontier. Stay tuned, we'll be right back. Alright, back to talk about Frontier. Any of you who heard my first podcast of the year where I talked about all the upcoming stuff that I was super duper excited to see will recall that this was on the list. And it's been out for a week and a half now. It came out March 15th on Wednesday. And it is magnificent. Now, I saw this movie literally the second that it came out on Netflix. And what that means is I had to stay up until 2 in the morning for it to be released. Now, I've only done this once before, and that was for the David Ayer film starring Will Smith and Joel Edgerton, Bright. And Bright, I still maintain, is absolutely fantastic. Triple Frontier, though, as I said in that first podcast of the year, I believed that it was going to be the one where Netflix was going to be truly recognized as having their movie game on point, and I was sorely not mistaken. I was very, 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 very much in the right. Now, I did forget about Roma, so that movie also is been taken very, very seriously by everybody, including the Academy. So my bad. Roma also, Netflix flexing its muscles. Roma and Triple Frontier have definitely cemented Netflix's place, I believe, in the annals of great filmmaking studios. So that is so awesome. You know, I can't tell you how excited I was to see this movie. I've been waiting for it for so long, for months on end, and it finally came out, and it is magnificent filmmaking. It is truly awesome. And I don't mean like, that was awesome, bro. I mean like awe, you know, like the word awe, A-W-E, awe, and then you know how people slap a sum at the end of it, so it's awesome. It's incredible, you know. I've watched it 4 times in the week and a half it's been out, and I haven't watched a movie this much in this short of a time period since I got The Dark Knight on DVD for Christmas back in 2008 and watched it at least once a day, sometimes 2 or 3 times a day, every day for about 2 weeks. And I guarantee I'll be watching it again within the next couple of days and then a couple of days after that, because it's just so damn good. I love this film so much. It was exactly what I thought it was going to be, and then also not that. If you don't know about the movie, the basic story is this. There's an ex-Special Forces operator who finds out about this cartel boss who's... he's the money guy in the cartel. So he handles everybody's money. He protects it. He does the financing, the books, and all that stuff. And he's the bank of the cartel. And he finds out where this guy's located and decides he wants to go after him. And to do that, he decides to reunite his old team of guys and get them to come down and at the very least help him do a reconnaissance of the property to formulate a plan of action that will get them in and out without them all dying and being successful in their mission, which is to take out the cartel boss named Larea. So kill Larea, get the money, and get Ghost. So he heads on back to the States and rounds these guys up. And, you know, after some convincing, they head down to do the recce, and they eventually decide to not involve the local authorities that the one guy, played by Oscar Isaac Pope, that he was working with when he found this information, and instead decide to pull this operation off by themselves, just the five of them. And from there, it's just, it's angelic filmmaking, you know. I mean, I don't have, I don't have a better word for it. It's just magnificent. You know, I'm not going to dive too far into it because the trailer does a great job of showing you what's in the movie, but not where it is in the movie. So I'm not going to get too far into that stuff because I don't want to ruin it for you. Because when I saw it, I was like, oh, so that part is here, and this part is there, and that part is not where I thought it was going to be. I thought that part was going to be later, but no, it's right there. So I don't want to ruin this for you, especially if, like me, you've been waiting to see it, and you just haven't gotten the time to see it in the week and a half that it's been out, and you hear this before you see it. So, you know, and if you haven't seen it, haven't heard about it, or, you know, you heard about it and you're like, eh, I don't know if I want to see it or not. And you hear this and you're like, oh, well, Jim says it's good, so it must be good. I mean, you know, I trust Jim. So, you know, I don't want to ruin anything for you. There is a possibility that I will be adding a segment to this episode or something like that because, some of my friends from work were also looking forward to it and have seen it, and you know, and I might try to get them on the podcast to talk about it, so maybe not, we'll see what happens. But that would be more of a spoiler heavy segment, so we'll see what happens with that. But it's just such a great damn movie, you know, like, it delivers exactly what I wanted it to deliver, and then it gave me more than I wanted, than I expected. It gave me more. That does not happen a lot. For me, you know, I'm pretty good at guessing what's going to go down in a movie or a TV show, because it's just, there's so many now. There's been so many movies and TV shows made you know, it's there's a lot of stuff out there that it's just pretty obvious what's going to happen next. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, that guy, he's for sure going to die. Like, duh. You know what I mean? Or like, oh, this, clearly, it's not going to go that way. It's going to go a different way. But this movie is not like that. Like, it's you know, it's so many things wrapped up in one, you know? It's a military movie. You know, insane, stupid operation. That's just, you know, just so ridiculously difficult that it's near suicide. But it's a movie, so obviously it can't go exactly right, otherwise we're not going to be very entertained, are we? I mean, with the exception, like, well, actually, see, actually, you know, I take that back, because, you know, I've mentioned it a couple of times on the podcast, the show SEAL Team, that a lot of the time the mission goes pretty much according to plan. And even if it doesn't, like, you know, it's never like, it usually doesn't get so far out, you know, like, so outrageous that it's just like, oh, it's always pretty real. It's always extremely realistic. But a lot of times the missions go just fine, you know, just as they plan to. And it's super exciting. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I opened up the possibility for us to make some military-style television show and film project where things just go according to plan and everything's okay. But, you know, but this one, you know, if you've watched the trailer, you obviously already know that things do not go according to plan, and things get pretty intense for these five operators. It's an amazing cast, one of my favorite casts of recent memory. Ben Affleck as Red Fly, Oscar Isaac, as I said, as Pope, Charlie Sheen as Ironhead, Garrett Hedlund as Benny, and Pedro Pascal as Catfish. All of these five guys are great individually as actors. I'm a huge fan of all five of them. Ben Affleck,
I mean, obviously, you know who the hell Ben Affleck is. Oscar Isaac, if you don't know, you will recognize him from stuff like the Star Wars films, The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, where he played Cameron Poe, and a lot of great other stuff as well, like A Most Violent Year, which he did with this film's director, J.C. Chandor. You know, he's just got a great filmography. Charlie Hunnam, you will know, of course, is the star of the very amazing, very epic television show Sons of Anarchy. Garrett Hedlund, you may not know the name, but you might recognize him from films such as Troy, where he played Brad Pitt, his character Achilles, his nephew, and from Four Brothers, with Walter and Tyree Simpson and Andre 3000. And from the Tron Legacy film, where he plays Jeff Bridges' character, Flynn, his son. And also from the film version of Friday Night Lights, not the also excellent television show. And then Pedro Pascal, you will probably most commonly recognize from the Netflix original television show Narcos, where he played the lead character, and did a fantastic job. So, huge fan of all five of these actors individually. Putting them together, stroke of genius. They all play off so well. The chemistry is fantastic. You know, and it's just a joy to see five really great actors, you know, who are at the top of the game. And yes, there's a lot of action. It's a big movie, you know. It's an epic film. There's lots of action, but there's lots of drama. So there is plenty of acting in this movie, which is so great, because so often action movies don't allow time for actors to really do their thing. You know what I mean, and create a character that's got depth to it, especially when you're just dealing with 2 hours, and in this case, you know, we start with Oscar Isaac's character, we don't get to see any of the other guys until about 10-12 minutes into the movie. You know, because there's this little opening bit with Oscar Isaac where he's, you know, on the prowl in South America doing his thing, and then he finds the stuff, information, and he's like, oh, formulate a plan, and then let me go get my guys. And so, you know, we don't even see some of these guys until about 10, 15 minutes into the movie. So, you know, when you're dealing with such a small amount of time to put forward some characters that, you know, have depth to them, and, you know, it's tough, you know. You have to have some good dialogue. I mean, even if the dialogue doesn't necessarily reveal information too much, you know, like if it's just like, oh, I shouldn't have done this, or I shouldn't have said that, or I should have said this instead, or, you know, we should have done something different. Even if it's just a line like that, that still reveals a lot, and the way that the actor portrayed that reveals so much about a character, and that's one of the things that all of these actors are really good at doing, is giving you information without giving you information. What I mean by that is, you know, the way that they'll say a line, the way that they'll act in a certain situation, you know, the way that they will handle being, you know, this way or that way, when the shit hits the fan. And all these actors are just really great at that kind of stuff, you know, like Ben Affleck. We were all worried about him doing Batman, but he crushed it. Batman is not one that a character that, you know, tosses on himself, you know. So it's really got to come from a more internalized, physicalized performance. You know, Charlie Hunnam as Jax in Sons of Anarchy, very similar. You know, like, he doesn't talk about himself very much, or his emotions, or his feelings and things. Like, you know what he's thinking when he pulls a gun in your face and shoots you in the head. You know, or or the way that he jumps on his bike and chases after somebody after, you know, they shot at him. He's like, oh no, I'm gonna get you. Who you see? Again, Cameron Poe, great performance.
Garrett Hedlund in Friday Night Lights. It's a very internalized performance. You know, it's very much, you know, inside kind of, you know, and very and more about the physicality and how and reaction to things. Pedro Pascal, ditto. You know. I mean, his Narcos character is just absolutely fantastic. I do forget the name off the top of my head because I haven't seen Narcos in a minute. You know, he did a great job. Absolutely fantastic. And then, and you know, and all of them just totally kill it in this movie. I mean, all the performances are so great. And the cool thing is that you just believe these guys. You know what I mean? Part of that is from stuff that they've done. You know what I mean? But when you see them all for the first time, all like anything that they've done before is just kind of washed away, and you don't even think about it, honestly. I mean, I wasn't anyway. Like, I wasn't thinking, like, there's fucking Batman, or, you know, like, look, the accountant, he's back. You know what I mean? Like, and I wasn't like, hey, Jax Teller, what's up, my man? Or, you know, Dameron Poe, what's cracking, homie? Or, you know, this is a blah 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 blah, et cetera, et cetera. You know, like anything that they've done before is just like you. It's just like you're not even thinking about it. It's just like, oh, what's up, Catfish? What's up, Red Fly? What's up, Ironhead? What's up, Pope? What's up, Benny? How's it going, guys? And you just see the character that they're playing. You know, nothing else. You don't see Charlie Hunnam. You don't see Ben Affleck. You don't see Garrett Hedlund. You don't see Oscar Isaac, and you don't see Pedro Pascal. You see the character. And obviously a huge part of that is the actors, but you also have to give props to J.C. Chandor. This guy directed the hell out of this movie. He is absolutely fantastic. If you don't know his work, you gotta, because he is just phenomenal, and he's on fire right now. You know, he's absolutely wonderful, and I can't wait to see what he does next, you know, because he's definitely a huge talent that needs because he's going to do some really incredible stuff over the next decade that's just going to blow us all away. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where his career ends up going. Here a little bit. I do apologize. You will note that there are two segments going here. I'm listening to this on my computer. You might have noticed there's like a my phone decided to be a total dick and interrupted my recording, so I had recording again. I tried to get it back in the I do apologize. Thanks a lot, Nolan. Just to wrap it up, you gotta check this movie out. It's really fantastic. The action is so well put together, well thought out. Before I go, though, I do have to call out another reviewer, as I did when I talked about Mile 22. Now, this guy, I was going to call him out by name, but I forgot to look that up before I started recording and talking. You're getting off easy this time. But if I do end up recording with some other people about this movie, I'm definitely bringing it up, and I'm definitely going to have a name. So prepare to suffer my wrath. This review, even though it's a positive review, is so terrible. It reads like it was written by a 4-year-old for their book report. And it's just so horrible. A couple of things about this particular article. The guy says that the first 20 minutes are super complicated, and I'm just like, what the hell are you talking about? I mean, you guys heard me describe the movie. The first 20 minutes is literally Oscar Isaac. He's in South America. He's doing some anti-cartel operation with the local policia. Finds some information about this guy. He's got a lot of money, and he goes back to the States to recruit these guys, special ops team, to come back down and do some stuff. And that's the first 20 minutes. How is that complicated? How is that so hard to follow that you're just like, what is happening right now? What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, that is, it's so not that complicated, guys. And just there's some other stuff that, like, you know, if I end up doing another segment on Triple Frontier that I'll bring up. Because it's just like, dude, if you're going to be a critic and you're going to write reviews about stuff, you should probably know what you're talking about, or at least be able to formulate a thought or an idea in a cohesive way for the reader, so that we can access this information that you're trying to give to us in a way that makes sense and doesn't, you know, because if you find this review, because the title is something like Netflix finds out how to use Ben Affleck or something like that, it's along those lines. If you find this review and you read it, you'll probably understand what I'm saying about how it reads like a 4-year-old book report. You know, they're standing up in class like, I read the book, it was really good. There were some things that happened in the book, and some of them were good, but some of them were not good. They were bad. And the things that were good, I liked, but the things that were bad, I did not. So, in conclusion, this book was very good for the most part, but some things were not so good because they made me sad and also a little mad. And I'm done. That's what it sounds like in my head. So, you know, whatever. And yes, I understand. I realize I can hear some of you be like, well, Jim, you've got a podcast. That's literally what you do. Review stuff. Aren't you throwing stones in the glass house? Maybe I am. I don't care. I'd like to think that you guys can understand what I'm talking about pretty good, you know, and I don't sound like some kind of a dumbass who, you know, doesn't know what he's talking about, and, you know, my thoughts that I convey to you, you know, sound intelligent enough that, you know, you guys aren't sitting there thinking, God, this sounds like an 8-year-old book report, or you know, whatever like that. So, I like to think that I'm a little bit more elevated. Things a little better than that. If I don't, feel free to call me. If you feel otherwise, if you think otherwise, feel free to let me know. but you know, I think you guys and find, you know, my discussions and things will be somewhat my thought process. maybe you don't though. I don't know. Maybe you're sitting there, you know, with your card at the end and your phone top pipe, sitting there thinking, my goodness, this is not a very intelligent fellow at all. Oh, I'm so pretentious. I'm just but yeah, that's gonna wrap it up. Triple Frontier, excellent movie. Can't wait to watch it again and again and again and again. It's just so damn good. Now I will say this, I'm not, without giving anything away, I want there to be a sequel and or a prequel to this movie.
I want to see the team in action. And a lot of these guys have facial hair, and they're gray. They have some gray hair, because I guess they're older. Clean shave them, or if you just at least dye their shit, so it's just, you know, like Ben Affleck, just all black, no gray streaks. Oscar Isaac, no gray streaks. Just do something to de-age them just a little bit. They could totally do a prequel movie to this. A prequel, I don't want as much as a sequel, though. The way that this movie ends, and without giving anything away, leaves potential for more. And that's super exciting. Yeah. One final thought. The opening of the film with Oscar Isaac going in with the policia to this particular operation where he finds out the information. It has Metallica's "Open the Plane." And I'm not a big Metallica fan. Megadeth for real. For one, Megadeth is just the superior band. They have superior musicianship. Their songs are better. And Dave Mustaine's not a total D-bag like James Hetfield and Lars Ulrich, you know. And Metallica really owes its success to Dave Mustaine, because Dave Mustaine used to be in Metallica. If you don't know the story, Dave Mustaine was in Metallica. He was lead guitar, and he was going to do vocals as well. And he wrote the majority of their first album, Kill 'Em All, which, incidentally, is my favorite Metallica album. And it was my favorite album before I knew all the behind-the-scenes Metallica stuff. Like, I didn't know anything about Metallica other than that they're Metallica. So, you know, I was like, well, I want to start at the beginning of their catalog. You know, I don't want to just go and get the Black Album. I don't want to just go and get Master of Puppets. You know, I want to start at the beginning and work my way up to Master of Puppets and work my way up to the Black Album. And so that's what I did, and I found their first album, and it was Kill 'Em All, and I popped in, I'm like, this is the best! Like, this is amazing! You know, like, Kill 'Em All has some of the best Metallica songs. Well, I should really say some of the best Dave Mustaine songs, or some of the best Metallica songs written by Dave Mustaine, and it's ridiculous, you know what I mean? It's like, they just took his stuff, like, and then just put it out there, you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, Metallica, you could go to hell, but the usage of For Whom the Bell Tolls, is magnificent, I will say that. There's this great shot, if you remember the song, opposite side of the, because he's sitting in the door, in the door seat, and the camera, and it cuts to a shot, and the camera's on the opposite door, and the helicopter's banking, making a turn, and you get glare from the sun, and it's just like, oh, now that shot is amazing, with that music, and those words, and that image lined up like that is just like, woo! Yeah, baby! That's what I'm talking about. Other than that, Metallica can go to hell. if you disagree, well, that's your opinion. Megadeth is better. That's the truth. Megadeth's better. Megadeth's way better. Dave Mustaine rules. Megadeth for life. Megadeth. Woo! But yeah. Alright. That's gonna do it. Yeah, Triple Frontier. Definitely go check it out. It's really great. It's just so good. I can't wait to watch it. But that's going to do it. That's going to be our show for tonight. Thank you so, so much for listening. You know, I can't say this enough, but I so appreciate all you who tune in and listen to my podcast. You know, it really hits me where I live, you know. I can't believe that this is a job that I have, you know, because I now I get paid to do this, essentially, and And it's just the coolest, it's the coolest job I've ever had, for sure, you know? I mean, making short films is the coolest thing I've ever done, but the best thing I've ever gotten for is this podcast, and that's because of all of you who listen to it. So, you know, you're the real hero. You guys are the real heroes, not me. So thank you so much for listening to this episode, to the episodes preceding this, and the episodes that will come after. I truly appreciate it. I love you guys so much. You know, my heart is full because of you. It genuinely is. So thank you so much for listening again. Please tune into our morning show, Morning Mangami, such an emotional moment ruined by words not being said correctly. Please tune into our morning show, Morning Mangami, with host Heath LaBombard. It's a great show. If you like mine, you'll probably like his. I mean, I have to say that just because it's like his show sucks. I'm kidding. No, it is a good show. It really is a good show. But yeah, check out his show. Check us out on social media, on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram. YouTube, we got new stuff going on there. I'm doing live streams. So we have a live stream out where I'm playing Batman the Telltale series video game, which is a lot of fun, and we'll be continuing on with that, and we'll be giving you other live streams as well, like Heath's been talking about doing Game of Thrones, the Telltale series, and stuff like that. So we've got a lot of really cool things that are in the works for you guys, so make sure you follow us on the other social media. You know, make sure that you're up to date with our stuff, because we got so much cool stuff that's coming for you this year. You don't even know, man. But yeah, that's gonna be it for us. Thanks so much again for listening. Thank you so much for stopping by for a nightcap. I am the titular Jim, and good night.
The Nightcap with Jim podcast is a Mangami production, hosted by James Smith, produced by Heath LaBombard and James Smith. For more Mangami content, visit Mangami Players all across the social medias.